in the limelight.
To Palestinians and their allies, U.S. hypocrisy is palpable. The United States selectively criticizes some countries for their human rights violations, but pointedly ignores the Zionist regime's illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and its commission of war crimes and crimes against humanity against the Palestinian people. 2 years after launching an investigation of war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Palestine, the ICC is still dragging its feet because of U.S. pressures. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The website of Truth Out wrote, "Nearly 2 years have passed since the International Criminal Court, ICC, began investigating war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in the occupied West Bank, including East al-Quds and Gaza. But the ICC has yet to take concrete steps to move the investigation forward. Frustrated with the glacial pace of the ICC's investigation and the lack of clarity about how and when the investigation will proceed, three Palestinian human rights organizations issued a joint statement to the Assembly of States parties to the Rome Statute, the management body of the ICC, on December 6, saying, "We have not seen any concrete step in this investigation. No action by the prosecutor to break the vicious cycle of impunity." They added, "The situation on the ground is deteriorating year after year, month after month, day after day. We feel that we have been left alone in our struggle, and Palestinian victims are losing hope." The initial news of the ICC investigation came on March 3, 2021, when Fatou Bensouda, then chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, ICC, announced the opening of a formal investigation into war crimes committed by the Zionist regime in the West Bank, including East al-Quds and Gaza Strip, during and since the Zionist regime's 2014 Operation Protective Edge, which killed 2,251 Palestinians. Following a five-year preliminary examination, Bensouda found a reasonable basis to believe that Israeli regime forces had committed the war crimes of willful killing, willfully causing serious injury, disproportionate use of force, and transfer of Israelis into Palestinian territory. Bensouda also found there was a reasonable basis to investigate possible war crimes by the Zionist regime forces, including intentional attacks against Palestinian people. The three Palestinian human rights organizations that issued a joint statement this month to raise concerns about the lack of progress in the ICC investigation are the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, a group that protects human rights and promotes the rule of law in accordance with international standards, Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights, a group that protects human rights, especially economic, social, and cultural rights, in the occupied Palestinian territory, and Al-Haq, which documents human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territory. In 2021, the opening of an investigation by the prosecutor was perceived as a huge leap forward, the groups wrote in their joint statement. "After years of frustration, we hope that it was the start of a new era of accountability for the grave crimes committed in the occupied Palestine." This year alone, the three groups added, more than 200 Palestinians, including many children, were killed by Israel's settler colonial regime in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Human Rights Organizations noted that beloved Palestinian Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Aghla was assassinated in cold blood by an Israeli sniper in broad daylight, and six prominent Palestinian civil society organizations, including Al-Haq, were shut down after being falsely designated as terrorist organizations. In spite of these events, the three organizations wrote the ICC's Office of the Prosecutor hasn't issued a single statement concerning Palestine. They contrasted the ICC's prosecutor inaction on Palestine with the situation of Ukraine, about which the Office of the Prosecutor has been very proactive. It is also crucial that the same level of attention, activity, and resources is applied to other situations, including Palestine, to avoid perceptions of selectivity and politicization, the groups wrote. Victims should not be competing for justice, and double standards should not have a place in justice, they said.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world, this is IRIB English Radio, and today I have the pleasure to be the host of this episode of Point of View. I am Beat at your service, and with me I have two dear guest speakers, my dear brother Ali. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And my dear brother, Muhammad, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure too to have you in here in this controversial discussion, which I'm really interested in. So, dear brothers, as you know, Islam in non-Islamic countries is somehow really special, because when you're in non-Islamic countries, you have to be different, especially if you're a woman. You know, you have to make a job or something when you're Muslim, and you are different. And as you know, for example, there are some Muslim families in non-Muslim countries which they are bringing up children and so on. And there are some problems with teaching Islamic rules and teaching some, you know, Islamic standards to these kids, actually. And not only these kids, but also the Muslim people which are living in non-Islamic countries. The thing I want to ask you is that... what is the necessity of teaching Islam to these people? You know, they are not a majority of Muslim people, and why should we actually somehow? I don't want to use this word, but waste our energy on these and non-Islamic countries to develop this actually system.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam Muhammad and his purified progeny. Well, education in general, with all its delicacies and intricacies, has a final and, let's say, ultimate goal that, again, would help human being to reach to that purpose of creation. So education can start from even if we believe that it starts, let's say, from a certain age, but definitely it will. It starts from before the birth of a baby or a child. And we have too many instructions for the education. But being in a non-Muslim country, we have some duties as duty-bound in case we're Muslim and we want our kids to be educated in an Islamic manner.
Yeah.
Look, first of all, in case we find it quite difficult, it's obligatory on us to be back to a Muslim country to do our educations there, because this is very important for us to educate in an Islamic system. So if in case we find it quite difficult and there is no way around. But if there is a possibility of educating our kids, even if in a non-Muslim country, even by ourselves, by our own family, we can manage this education. So it can be done. It can be handled anyhow. So what is important that we should not neglect this important cause, that we have to care for the education of our kids.
Yeah.
And the kind of Islamic teachings that we want them to learn. Look, based on Islamic teachings, we have some levels of Islamic instructions to be learned and to be given to the kids or to newborns. It starts from day one of his birth. I mean, we have quite plenty of, let's say, issues that we need to care and talk and focus and talk about. Like, for example, choosing the name of the baby. I don't know if it is a male.
These details.
And the details of that. I mean, how to treat the kid at the first month, second month, or I don't know, the word La ilaha illallah should be given to him or to be learned to him while he's in that age. I don't know, too many things. And for example, in the first 7 years, he doesn't need any formal education. In the second 7 years, he starts his formal education. These are the things that we have in hadith and narrations and from Islamic teachings, but we have to care for the education of our kids.
So you're telling me that education is so important. Yeah, I do agree with that. That education is actually important, especially Islamic education. But the thing is, as you know, the limitation between cultural concept between Western countries and Islamic countries is so different. And sometimes mm-hmm. you cannot tell me that, okay, this is not true. And, you know, this is not about the accuracy of these cultural contents, you know. Mm-hmm. This is about the differences, only the differences. You cannot tell me that which one is good and which one is bad, but sometimes there are some obstacles for, I don't know, teaching Islam in non-Islamic countries, as you know.
I think it's not bad to explore the history of education itself and how mm-hmm. it has become to be like this, like it is today. Before the Industrial Revolution and before this systematic way of sending the children to the schools, preschool and then onwards, the K-12 style of education, the students, where were they taught? The education was home. The mother would have been home. And again, all these discussions we would have had about feminism also plays an important role over here. The mother would have taken this big responsibility of teaching the children of what is good, what is bad, how a person should behave, what is culture. Different aspects of culture would be inherited from the mother to the children, likewise the father outside the house, right? But after the Industrial Revolution, you see, even after the, maybe let's say 5-6 years, as soon as a child is 5-6 years, then the child goes to
schools.
And unfortunately, this even gets worse in Western countries where we have baby cares, where the mother and father, they're both working. As soon as the mother delivers, a few months after the medical period, she goes to work, the father goes to work. From the inception of the child, goes towards baby care. They don't even realize the qualification of those teaching the children, mm-hmm. taking care of the children. Yes, in terms of, you know, maybe hygiene, they might be very well equipped. They might change the diapers properly. They might look after the child. They might even pay, you know, give some good food. But what about the education that is given to the child, the culture that is being transmitted from that person to the other, right?
Yeah.
So this Industrial Revolution that has changed this education system calls for a very important focus in Islamic education, not only in the Western countries, but also in the Islamic country. Why? Because take a look at Islamic countries in the around the Persian Gulf, including Iran. When does a child go to the school? Preschool. 5, 6 years old,
five,
right?
5, 6, 7, yeah.
Exactly. So from this age onwards, the majority of his awoken time, I'm not talking about his time, generally in 24 hours, the child is with the parents more, right? But if you look at the time he's awake, 5 to 6 hours a day, he's dealing with someone other than his parents.
Yeah.
Let me refer to part of the sister's question where she said that the families might care for the content of the syllabus that the students are going to study, or the kids, right?
Yeah. But I'm telling you that we shouldn't omit these cultural contexts. You know, we are trying to delete all these and just put in something else instead of that, and we're telling that, okay, we are doing the right thing. But sometimes mm-hmm. you have to do agree with the culture. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
There are some values that are accepted worldwide. Mm-hmm. So we cannot say that, okay, morality is good here. Or there might be some very few changes, in the understanding of those values.
Yeah.
But they are usually accepted worldwide. But when we say that, for example, truth is good for all communities and for nations, right? For all communities and nations. So when we are talking about the decent content, we have to actually try our best to feed our kids with a good content. A good content which is quite valid. We can criticize, some educational systems due to their, mal context, but it might happen even inside our country here. So we even criticize some of the educational systems which are available in our country here.
Yeah.
So it can, this criticism can be applied to different educational systems. So we as parents are obliged to choose and are forced, it's our duty to choose a good and decent content for our kids, right?
Yeah.
In case there are some, content with, let's say...
explicit content.
Sorry?
Explicit content. Inappropriate content.
Inappropriate contents. So we have to try our best to find, either at home or in other institutes to compensate for that. Let me tell you, with regard to the importance of the question, ex-president of U.S., Obama, he was from a Muslim family. He was studying in Don Bosco school in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
So due to the teachings of that school, he converted to Christianity, and then he became the president, and he moved to America, and he became the president. So he actually converted from a Muslim family in Indonesia. So this is the importance of this question of yours that shows, yes, the contents are very important for us. So we have to be careful what kind of contents we are actually giving to our kids. Or there are some, let's say, to some extent I can say, there are some valid educational systems at least, trusted systems that we can at least take their contents and give our kids. But does it mean that we are depriving our kids from the things that are being taught in other systems? No. Look, if our kid is well-equipped and well-taught in the content that we are actually we are supervising, for sure he or she will not face any deprivation from the content of knowledge in that level.
Yeah, I understand you, actually. But, the thing is, if we consider that, okay, the content is actually appropriate, it's amazing, it's perfect, and okay, which is not, we all know that it is not that much appropriate because, there is no observation on that much. But
which content are you talking about?
Educational content, which actually provided in every educational system.
So, some of them have some strong points and some weak points. We cannot present something without any fault, right?
Okay. So, as you know, we're talking about non-Islamic countries. In non-Islamic countries, there are different methods, but Islamic methods are somehow limited, for the Islamic education, we lack somehow methods, we lack something, because this is non-Islamic countries, as you know, and the majority of people are not Muslim, so this is so natural. But the question is that, actually, which method are you using? Not only you, but other people in non-Islamic countries. What are they doing about this education? And in this method, where does it come from? Is it a method, or they are trying to actually create a way for this Islamic education?
As we speak in non-Islamic countries, normally the Muslims that are there, they have communities.
Mm-hmm.
And this community really helps out not only in the Islamic education of the children, but also the cultural, in preserving the cultural values of the families there. And these communities really do have a lot of effect in education. not only the programs they have, but in most cases you would find these communities do also have schools specific for Muslims, right? Although the curriculum and the syllabus is government approved and it comes from somewhere else, it's not necessarily Islamic, the teachers and so on in these Islamic schools, because they're from an Islamic background, they know exactly what to teach, how to teach, and what to avoid teaching, what to teach in a different way. Yeah. All of this is. But in certain communities where this privilege isn't there, where they don't have schools, they have other ways. For example, they implement Sunday schools, just like how the Christians are trying to preserve their religion through Sunday schools. Muslims, considering the 5 days that the students go to, whatever they learn, it's on their own. Mm-hmm. Mostly they're, physics, chemistry, mathematics, the education that is required for their life. But then when it comes to the guidance on Sundays, they normally have Quran and other Islamic education that really kind mm-hmm. of reimburses. But is this the way? In my opinion, no. There is a lot more to be done about Islamic education. Yeah, exactly. The first and the foremost and the most important one is the syllabus and curriculum. The education system mm-hmm. itself. Education system itself should become an Islamic one. Yes, these Sunday schools, they do help preserve the culture and values, Islamic values of that child in that society living, especially when we consider that their entire environment is non-Islamic. The culture that they take in from around them is somewhat a culture that is not accepted by Islam, but they do help in the Islamic schools, but in the Sunday schools. But when you look at the syllabus itself, the damage that is done through the syllabus, it cannot be reimbursed just by Sunday schools. Mm-hmm. The things that they learn in social studies, in geography, in history during the week can't be just reimbursed in one day Sunday school with reading Quran. The syllabus itself has to entirely, change.
Thank you for listening to this episode. This is all the time we had. I wish you enjoyed the discussion of today. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Allah. يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us refresh our minds with a wise statement from the Prophet of Islam to his vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon them. O Ali, the most favorable deeds to attain the proximity of God are three. The best worshipper is the one who fulfills the obligatory duties of God properly. The most pious of people is the one who abstains from forbidden matters. And the wealthiest of people is the one who is satisfied with that which God has given.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Sideline.
Hello and welcome to The Sideline, where we discuss the latest hot topics of the FIFA World Cup 2022. I am your host, Hamza Khayoun. Today, we'll reflect on those nerve-wracking semi-finals and look deeper into the dynamics of this momentous final between Argentina and France. As usual, we'll be hearing from our experts on this matter, but before that, we have a special report on how we've reached this point.
And then there were two. From 32 teams all entering Qatar with their hopes and dreams held high, there are now only two left to fight for the gold. France versus Argentina. The final showdown is upon us. Argentina beat Croatia 3-0 in their semi-final match, Lionel Messi hammering home a penalty and wowing the fans in Qatar with his skills. This semi-final match brought Croatia's World Cup hopes to a decisive end. The other semi-final was a different story. While a French team filled to the brim with former colonial subjects was able to defeat Morocco 2-0, it was a far closer affair. Morocco dominated the game, coming so close to scoring several times, but their fairy tale victory was not to be. Despite promising efforts from Ashraf Hakimi and a stunning bicycle kick from Javad Al-Yamik, which hit the post, the Moroccan team just couldn't break through the French defense. Morocco fought valiantly and gained the respect of millions across the world. As the first African team to reach this level of the competition, they've made history in Qatar. Now we're presented with an ultimate showdown between world champions France and a scintillating Argentinian side. This game will contain two players who are competing for the golden boot, Mbappe and Messi. Both of these legends have provided us with breathtaking moments throughout the competition, and it's likely they will see this final as an opportunity to cement their legacies. The French team that won the 2018 competition was almost 90% immigrants or children of immigrants from former French overseas territories. Has this gifted the team an unfair advantage? Argentina fans were spotted parading the Palestinian flag throughout the streets of Doha. Will they bring this energy to the final? Can France win a second World Cup in a row? Or can Argentina continue its irresistible rise? this Sunday, there will only be one winner.
We are joined in the studio by our resident football analyst, Mo Haider. Mo was a key figure in the development of Arsenal Fan TV, where he was eventually dismissed for his public support for the Palestinian cause. Now he runs his own YouTube channel, where he provides cutting-edge analysis and incisive commentary on the latest Arsenal games. We're also joined in the studio by Bav. Bav is a world-renowned YouTuber, an encyclopedia of football knowledge, and a Premier League expert. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. So, Bav, the quarterfinal and semifinal have been super exciting to watch. Did they go as you expected?
Well, it was a surprise on the quarters for Morocco to go through, but a good surprise. And Croatia to beat Brazil as well in penalties. That was a really good game as well. But more importantly, I think, for England to get knocked out, it was heartbreaking, but Harry Kane did what he did. And I think into the semi-finals, I was a bit more... I wanted Morocco to go through, but at the same time, I think France were the team that was always going to go through. They had more experience. And Argentina, because of Messi, I have to support them all the time.
And Mo, the knockout stage where you really get to see the pressure of the tournament. Which players have impressed you the most throughout the knockout stage and responding to that pressure?
Well, yeah, you're right. The pressure at the knockout stage of a tournament is insane. You're not just dealing with your own reputation. You're dealing for your whole country's hopes and dreams. And for some players, that becomes too much, and you see them slip into the shadows. But the true greats respond, and I think we've seen that with Lionel Messi, who's been the absolute standout player. In addition, I think Antoine Griezmann has responded really well to the pressure in these knockout stages. He's been a real shining star for France, where Mbappe has actually taken more of a back seat. But in addition to that, Alvarez for Argentina has done very, very well, especially for such a young player. Perhaps he doesn't feel the burden of the pressure which Messi has taken, but the standout player who's responded to that pressure has got to be the greatest of all time, Leo Messi.
And Bav, which players have been the standout performers at the World Cup so far, and
I think
why?
Morocco have quite a few. Unahi, I think he was very good yesterday in the semi-final. Amrabat's been amazing as well. The goalkeeper, Bono, he's been outstanding. But I think you go into Croatia as well, their goalkeeper, Livakovic, he's been fantastic as well. Gvardiol at the back, he's been amazing. France with Mbappe, I think Tchouameni's been very underrated as well. And then Lionel Messi at Argentina, I mean, what a player.
What would you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, as Bad was talking, I was thinking, when are you going to say Messi? It seems like at this World Cup, you can't have any conversation without saying Leo Messi. So I think he's done brilliantly. I think, look, it's feels like it could be his World Cup, but I guess we'll discuss whether France can ruin that. But he has been the main man so far.
Mo, at the beginning of the episodes, you predicted Brazil, Argentina and France as the two main contenders for the trophy. Two of those teams have now gone to the finals. The last time we spoke, you had France as favourites. What's your latest stance on this?
Unfortunately, I still think France are going to ruin what it seems like the footballing world generally want to see. Of course, other than the French footballing world. I think people want that poetic finale for Lionel Messi, but I think France are going to break his heart and the dreams of a lot of people.
Bav, what have you made of Morocco's performance so far? I mean, leading up to the semi-finals and the semi-finals themselves, what do you make of that?
I think they have been amazing. And going into the future, I think they give hope to other countries that might not have the historical World Cup history, but they can turn up at World Cup. And when the fans are behind them, they can do some amazing things. So, especially for African teams as well, because they've not really had... This is the first African team to get to a semi-final. So I think it's an inspiration for the future as well, and for Morocco themselves. Mm-hmm. The football they've played has been amazing. The defensive security, and then even going forwards, they've been so decisive on the counter-attack. I think, if anything, it's an inspirational story.
Well, do you think the final is a case of Mbappe versus Messi?
I mean, look, the narrative will obviously be Mbappe versus Messi, or in fact, I should say Messi versus Mbappe, because Messi is, for me, the leading light for Golden Ball. He's... one assist ahead in the race for the Golden Boot. The story is obviously going to be about them, and no one would bet against one of those two men having the decisive moment in the final. But in reality, look, there are other very, very good players. A lot of French people right now feel as though Griezmann has actually been their standout player, the one pulling the strings, not necessarily racking up the stats, but the one pulling the strings. So on the French side, you have Griezmann, Rabiot has been fantastic, and Dembele hasn't really done enough. Perhaps he might have a moment in the final. On the other hand, with Argentina, you have Alvarez, as I mentioned, who could really make a difference. And even coming off the bench, Lautaro Martinez has really underperformed in this World Cup, slightly like Dembele. Perhaps he might be called on off the bench and have a decisive moment. But clearly Messi and Mbappe are the favourites.
And Bab, who are you tipping on winning the Golden Ball and why?
The greatest of all time, Lionel Messi. Has to be. Most goals and assists. And I mean, the way he's carried the Argentina team has been amazing. I think they've got a good team, Argentina, but not one that should be in the final. But Messi makes that team special because he's a special player. So I think for me, it's an obvious answer.
Emma, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think Golden Boot is very much up for grabs. That's a objective measure, just the number of goals. But in terms of Golden Ball, it's more subjective. The importance that Messi has had on Argentina is far greater, in my opinion, than the importance that Mbappe has had on France. Because we've spoken about the shared responsibility in the French team, whilst it's a case of sole responsibility in the Argentinian team. Lionel Messi has been the best player of the World Cup.
And Bav, who is in your team of the tournament and why?
I think goalkeeper is Croatia's Livakovic. Saved four penalties to get into the semi-finals. I think he's been amazing. Left back of Gonzalo Hernandez. He didn't start the World Cup. He was the backup left back for France, but he's been amazing. Centre backs of Gvardiol, and I've gone for Saiz. But I want to shout out Harry Maguire because I think he had a lot of criticism going into the tournament, but now he's shown that he is a very, very good defender. Right back, I've gone Hakimi from Morocco. I think he's been amazing as well, and the penalty against Spain was sensational. And then midfield, I'm going to go for, I want to shout out Amrabat, but I'm going to go Tchouameni because I think he's been underrated for France. And alongside him, Luka Modric. He's fantastic. And to get to another semi-final, maybe get place as well. Amazing. Midfield, wide forwards, I'm going to go for Griezmann. Even though he's not played there, I think he's been fantastic with France. I think he's made the most chances in the entire tournament. And I'm also going to go for Bruno Fernandes, who I think was also very underrated. Up front, I think the obvious answer is Messi and Mbappe. Fantastic players.
Well, what do you make of that? And quickly, what is your final prediction for the match between France and Argentina?
So I agree with a lot of Babs I said there, but I'd actually go Bonu for the goalkeeper position. In midfield, I would agree with Fernandes, but I'd put Bellingham in there and I'd put Griezmann in there as well in place of Luka Modric. Other than that, I agree. So I think we're quite aligned, just a few differences. But I think what really speaks volumes is that in the team, we've got four Moroccans in Bonu, Hakimi, Saiz and Amrabat, and all of them in that defensive role, which really echoes just how well Morocco have done defensively in this tournament. And for the final, unfortunately, I'm going to have to say I think France will 2-1, either in normal time or perhaps extra time, but I think they'll get over the line 2-1.
And Bav, what do you think?
Argentina? 2-1, Messi.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us on the sideline today and throughout the World Cup. We've enjoyed bringing you all this news from this tournament and hope you enjoy the final. From all of us here at the sideline, goodbye.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to be with us. Because today we're going to speak about the behavior and social interaction of a believer.
I pray to God, my heart, soul, and body, every single day of my life, with every breath, I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So please leave you is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so. I love you so.
Today, Sunday, is the 23rd of Jamadil Awwal, 1444 of the Islamic lunar calendar, corresponding to the 27th of the month of Azar, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar and 18th of December 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we start with the Holy Quran, verses 65 to 66 of chapter Furqan, and then we'll learn more about the points of these verses.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. والذين يقولون ربنا اصرف عنا عذاب جهنم إن عذابها كان غراما.
And those who say, Our Lord, avert from us the punishment of hell. Indeed, its punishment is ever adhering.
إنها ساءت مستقرا ومقاما.
Indeed, it is evil as a settlement and residence.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
There are two ways for getting released from the fire: worshipping and doing good deeds. When Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, dedicated some properties to Allah, he wrote in act for the establishment, I dedicated this for saving myself from the fire as well as getting the fire away from me. In this noble verse, the fourth attribute of the servants of the beneficent, which is the fear of divine chastisement, is mentioned. Although these servants of the beneficent remember and worship Allah in the midnight and do their duties in the day, their heart is still full of the fear that their duties to be done rightly. It is that fear that is the powerful factor of doing duties more and better.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I, when I have you, to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you know I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
The topic of this episode is the behavior and social interaction of a believer. For a new convert to Islam, comprehensiveness may mean that there are many things that he will have to change about himself in order to be a complete and true Muslim. He may have many character flaws from his pre-Islamic days that he will have to work on and correct. He has no choice but to intend to change his ways. He is now stating his belief in Islam. If his belief is true, it must mean that he's willing to accept what the faith is teaching him, and he's willing to do his best to implement it in his life. As his understanding of Islam increases and as his faith strengthens, many behaviors may change automatically as he now has a new view on life and a correct understanding of reality. This new understanding of his reality automatically and sometimes even imperceptibly from the individual's point of view changes the person's behavior and character.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The topic of our discussion today is about the code of conduct for a Muslim. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, peace be upon him, considers one of the most important signs of a follower, a true follower of the school of Ahlul Bayt, to be steadfast in the path of truth. And he considers the achievements of true happiness to depend on the this admirable quality. And he says, if our Shias preserve in the path of truth, the angels of the sky will shake hands with them. The clouds of mercy will cast shadows over them, and their faces will shine like the bright day, and they will eat sustenance from the earth and the sky, and they will have, and they will not have any demands from God, unless the Almighty God grants them. So the greatness, the next characteristic that we are expecting from the followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is the greatness of their egos and the avoidance of humiliation. So we have to learn again from our leaders, from our, let's say, authority, from our Islamic leaders, or let's say the imams, that everyone's character depends on a sort of self-esteem. Man needs self-respect and honoring his character more than anything, even than water and food, because the suffering of hunger and thirst can be removed, but the humiliation of the character and the annoyance of his soul cannot be removed so easily, and it may last until the end of the person's life. Definitely, you and me have many of such cases in our minds, that, for example, we have seen humiliation of others, or, I don't know, some records of humiliation in front of, let's say, a group of people, that we have understood and actually touched how bitter it is.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
Now let's look at the Muslim code of behavior, that is treating all creations kindly. Dear friend, no one likes someone who speaks harshly to them, treats them unfairly. If the Messenger of Allah can tell us to treat animals kindly, how else should we then treat humans and other creations? Be nice to people regardless of their social status or their closeness to you. The internet is filled with the stories of strangers who hurt others just because they think they can. Be the Muslim who comes to the aid of a stranger. Be the person who speaks up for others, and do not the person that everyone tries to stay away from due to the harm that can come to them from you. Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace be upon him, and his pure progeny, the Messenger of Allah, said, "The dearest and nearest among you to me on the day of resurrection will be one who is the best of you in manners." We're speaking about social behavior on today's special. In this part, fairness and justice. Fairness and justice are observable characteristics of elevated and purified souls. For those who are fair do not wrong others and avoid selfish and self-centered actions. Islamic teachings describes these commendable qualities like this. I'm gonna read some verses. At first, from the Holy Quran, chapter 4, verse 135. O you who believe, stand firmly with justice. And for this one, you can find it in chapter 5, verse 8. O you who believe, remain principled for the sake of Allah and bear witness with justice. Do not let hatred of anyone provoke you into intolerant behavior. Conduct yourself honorably, for that is nearer to piety. The Prophet of Islam said, an hour's justice is worth more than 7 years of fasting the whole day and praying the whole night. 1 hour of injustice is worse than 6 years of sin. The highest level of justice is to love for others what you love for yourself and hate for them what you hate for yourself.
One of the most important reasons that the pre-Islamic society of Arabia and other societies around, they did not accept religion. They rejected their prophets and messengers. They rejected the revelation, divine revelation. One of the reasons is that religion is against class society. There is no class society in Islam. There is no class society in a true Christianity, in a true Judaism. There is no room for a class society. In fact, religion and messengers and revelations and the prophets, they came to abolish the class system. Tabaqiyya. No class system. No one is above others. No one. No matter where you come from. Even if you are the son of the prophet, you are not better than me and better than you. إِلَّا بِالتَّقْوَى إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. Through piety and righteousness and more work and more responsibility and more commitment and more help, helping others, we can excel. Not through race, not through color, not through family name. Family name has no meaning in Islam. No meaning. Race has no meaning in Islam. It happened that God created some people white, some black, some red, some in the north, some in the south. That does not mean that there is a preference for those over those.
That was all from today's special. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode of today's special by IRIB English Radio. Till then, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi aman Allah.
You heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.